Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is a rad week. Janky Toys comes back on, and we love having him on. This is number 4 with him, where we talk upcoming projects, we catch up with what he's been doing with Alex Pardee, and so much more. If you want more from Toys on Tap, you gotta follow along at Toys on Tap on all socials. You can jump on and support the show in a free way by liking, following, rating, reviewing, wherever you get podcasts. That helps us get into more ears, and it lets us have the ability to do more, because more people hear us and get our stuff. And lastly, if you want to support the show, jump on patreon.com/toysontap. It's where you get extra goodies when we make them. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. What's up?
Hello, my friend.
Yo.
How are you?
I was listening to a lot of Celine Dion today.
I don't know what that says about your mental state. Is that good or bad?
I think it's good. The hard part is, like, I go to the gym regularly, and people, if I'm focused in on something, I have this, like, serious face. Uh-huh. But behind the headphones is like, if you want it the most.
I picture you, like, free benching, and it's just, if I.
Yeah.
You know,
her songs, those, they seem slow, they hit the, like, the cadence of buildup.
All right.
And so it's like, if I'm on, like, rep 8 and I need to get to 10, and it just
this is a hot take, man. This is
it's so good. I'm so in. I'm pumped that you're on. This is number 3.
They're technically 4, 3.5.
Where is, okay, I mean, seems like you know my show better than I do. Oh, that's right.
The decon roundtable. So I'm going to call it 4 because I'm a narcissist and need to be praised.
Absolutely.
I expect a gold jacket when I do 5, like they give you on Saturday Night Live. Like,
ask and you shall receive. You know what's so funny about that designer con thing? I learned very quickly I will never do that again.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it was a fun discussion, but
it's
chaotic and too hard to hear everything. And
also, it was a time in which, like, I was just starting. I think that happened my first year in doing the podcast, 2021.
Yeah.
Which means I didn't.
Yeah, I think you're right. Cause I think the first time I was on was probably 2021.
So yeah. And I didn't really know. I mean, you have all these personalities in the room. Don't really know any of you.
Right.
And I'm, like, kind of just trying to schmooze and direct it and, like, figure that. Bad call for me. Bad call.
Now here you are, the center of the orbit. We all.
We've made it. I wish it felt, just so everyone knows, being the center of the orbit, I wish people understood that, like, you don't feel like that. You're still always clamoring for, like, I have to line up interviews, I have to make the next toy, I gotta, like, it just continues.
Well, and, you know, you've got, like, you know, 2 planets and a bunch of asteroids circling you. It's not like
right.
And the, it's most, like, powerful galaxy out there.
It's crazy. And you, like, what's there, I don't know, like, Nacelle today did something where they tagged all these people in their latest post about being manufacturer of the year, I don't, or whatever, which I don't know, whatever. How I get tagged in that is so crazy to me. I'm not even in that realm. Like, you have people that have accounts that are massive, and I don't even work with collectors that often. I usually just work with artists.
You done something with Nacelle, right? Didn't you?
Brian came on at one time.
Yeah.
And they did a fun little bait and switch where I thought we were going to talk about toys, but it was just to promote his show that came out, The Movies That Made Us or something.
Oh, gotcha.
And it was like, hot take, Brian, I care about the toys.
I thought you were going to say he came, you know, he bait and switched, you came on to talk about the toys, and then you just did, like, souffle recipes for the entire
episode. He would have died. Yeah, holy moly. Okay, but we're here for you. None of that shenanigans. Yeah. Like we've done before, introduce yourself, tell us who you are, what you do.
My name is Chris Ryder, better known as Janky Toys or just Janky. I am an artist that works in a lot of different formats. Toys is probably the one I'm best known at, but I also paint and draw and do a bunch of other stuff. And I do DK Toys TV with Dove and the DKE crew. And the rest of my life is slowly falling apart around me. So I don't know.
That's crazy to say that to someone who is recently unemployed.
Yeah, it's wild out there. I mean, I we talked about this before, but
yeah,
since it's been like 3 years since I've been on, I was a television editor for 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that career really broke me down mentally, physically, emotionally. I mean, it was pretty crushing by the time I got out.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to transition into like the real world from there is really difficult. And so
yeah,
I got out in like 2000.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So, yeah, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check anyway, it out.
Toy Rats.
Toy Rats.
YouTube.
Bye.
Bye.
One-ish. And I still haven't found, like, firm ground, you know? So
yeah.
It's, I feel for you, dude. I'm sorry that happened. And you know, good things will come, but we're all treading some real uncharted waters right now. So.
Yeah. There is a job that I want so bad, and we'll talk about it off camera so that no one else applies for it.
Oh, there you go. Smart.
But it's like the ideal job, and I would love it. However, if people know who I am, I have degrees and things in which I pigeonholed myself.
Right. Right.
And so Toys on Tap is really helpful in like marketing myself, but I have a master's degree in something that doesn't matter for business.
Right.
And
here's, and I'm no master at this clearly.
Yeah.
You know, but so what I'm finding now is I have to find ways to take what I did and translate it into like job speak. So like lead editor on a television show is ran creative department or managed schedules. And you know, so
yeah,
it's a lot of stuff like that, that you end up having to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
You know, I mean, okay. Hey, before we jump into catching up, I want to talk about what happened at DCon for the world, because I still don't think you understand how much it mattered to me, because part of that is why I was let go.
Oh.
And so at DCon, Dove is doing this that his generosity is chaotic to me. He does this thing where he's like, I want one of, because he's a collector and he stores up our art and archives our stuff for us because he knows we never will.
Right, right.
So he wants a KMB or something. And because I absolutely love Dove and he saw me so early on, I brought him one and I was like, here, whatever. And he had said something like, choose whatever you want from here. And I was like, no, like, don't yuck my blessing. Like, don't do that.
Let me be generous to you.
Right. And we went back and forth. And then I finally made some kind of statement of like, I'll make you a deal. Like, you come out here and like fist fight. Whoever wins pays for whatever, something like that.
Uh-huh.
And then you popped in and said something like, this is weird. The two most generous people I know,
are arguing over.
Right. And on that night, I was driving home. Like I packed up all my stuff, was driving back to Vegas. And I just like, I pulled over, sent you a text. Cause it was like, I don't know that you understand that no one ever has referenced me that way. And be it that I've worked in nonprofits or be it that I've done whatever, I push really hard for the things that I care about. And sometimes in that passion, I come off as like, you're too passionate or you're too abrupt. And so I've tried to learn very carefully how to shift that. But what I noticed, especially in like in talking with like counselors and stuff, even after you made that comment of like, the place where I shouldn't have to pick up a sword and defend myself is my normal day-to-day job.
Mm-hmm.
In the place where there's like ex-drug addicts and people that are crazy and like artists and all that stuff,
right,
I should be defending myself like crazy, but there is where I feel most comfortable and I can be most open and generous.
Yeah.
It doesn't bode well for the church as a whole.
Right.
But it was like such a shock to my soul driving home. And I think about it often, and it's crazy that you said that and you called something out in me that I've been struggling with for, like, I don't know, I'm 35 now, so probably 20 years.
Wow. Well, I mean, geez, dude, that, I mean, that text message you got was, or you sent me, was really touching. And, you know, I wasn't saying anything other than what I know, which is, you know, how generous you are. And, you know, not just generous, you're like, you're passionate, you're dedicated, and you make, you're fair. I think that's the big thing. Mm. Like, you know, that they're, it's really easy to get in this position where you came in and you were guns blazing when you came in with all the toys, and then I'm gonna do that, I'm gonna do Toys on Tap and all this stuff. And it's really easy for those curmudgeon-y art assholes like myself to be like, what's this guy doing? Like, you know, he hasn't earned his place, blah, 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 you know. But instead of like taking this platform you created and using it strictly for your own benefit, you know, to meet people, to network, to do whatever, you took it and you used it to elevate other people that you found interesting. And you easily could have been like, you know, I'm going to use this to get free toys, or I'm going to use this to, you know, to get my name in with like Nacelle or, you know, Super 7 or any of those people. And instead you used it to let them talk about their TV show. And, you know, like, so it's just, it's your generosity, but it's also just, you're very genuine about it. And, I don't know. Like I said, it's crazy to me that that statement has that much impact, and I'm honored that I was able to say something that helped affect you. I'm sorry.
I'm done with therapy because of you. So thanks.
I don't think you should be. I think you should stay with that. I'm sorry it may have led to the end of your job, but
well, it did only in that I was holding them accountable for other things that they were doing, and my generosity doesn't get to show when people aren't held accountable in certain situations. And so I become almost hard to work with. And then when you start holding people to the fire, they're like, you got to get out of here. Like, you no longer fit.
Right.
And that's fine. But I realize there's like all those connections in that, but we're not here for that. We're here about you and all your stuff.
I mean, I'll do this all day. I don't know if your audience wants to hear us. Yeah. each other here, but
we kind of have to catch up. I think the last time you came on, you had just finished hosting your most recent show at E2K, RIP.
The first show, I think, at E2K, because I think it was 2002 was the last time I was on, right? That, because it was the
dollar store characters that you replicated.
I was on for that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. For some reason I didn't think I was on here for that. I thought I was on here. It was the Paunch show.
You were for sure on for that. Maybe. Okay. I don't know. You were on there for somewhere. So let's start from the, tell me about the show with the dollar store thing, like replicating that. And then let's go forward from there and catch me up.
Cause that's the last thing I did. this is going to be a real short interview, dude, if we're talking about achievements. so I did, Eartha Kentucky, which is unfortunately now gone, but it's sort of transmuted it and mutated into another really cool, maker space. But, they've been generous enough to host two solo shows for me. The first one was in 2002, and that was Paunch, where I created this like teeny bopper magazine full of fat celebrities. And it was like, what if there was a world where big dudes like me were the sex symbols? And then I made 15 Chris Farley action figures for that. And it was super fun.
Yeah.
So they invited me back to do another show. It was supposed to be in 2003, and then we had to move it for various reasons. So in 2004, I did a show there called The Worst Toys in the World. And the premise on that show was I was in the dollar store and I found these three just god awful action figures. I mean, I really think they're the three worst action figures I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Their faces are squished. Their expressions are weird. The painting is just janky as hell. And I immediately fell in love with them. And I bought this like play set that had them in it. I have never seen them since. Yeah. I've seen one of them, but I have never seen the other two since. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad I bought it when I did. So those figures sat around for a while and I was trying to figure out what to do with them. And I, you know, my work is very heavily relies on sort of parody. It relies a lot on, I don't want to say alternate realities, but sort of like what if scenarios and what's the weirdest version of this. It's, I've mentioned this a bunch before, but there's a Mel Brooks quote about the best parody is 2% off from reality. Like that's the best. And that's sort of my view, is like, take it and skew it just enough that it's weird, but also keep it recognizable. That's kind of what I like to do. So I decided to take these three figures and use them as the basis to recreate bootleg versions of a bunch of my favorite toy lines. So Universal Monsters, I did the Simpsons, I did some Pokemon figures, G.I. Joe. God, I can't remember all of them. The McDonald's figures, I love the Ronco McDonald's figures. Mm. And so I made up a whole new franchise called McNardo's. And so there were those, which also led to some chicken nugget figures that I did for Daniel Brad Chicken Nugget Show. So I just created this line of like, I think it was 35 or 36 one-off pieces that were all weird bootleg versions of toy lines I really liked. And I only used those three forms. So the three figures were the only thing I did. So I was repainting and repurposing those, sculpting on them. One of them was Secret Wars. And so I took the guy with the hat and I sculpted Wolverine ears off of his head. And
bonkers.
One of them was were Amiibos, the Nintendo things. Mm. And so I did one that was Donkey Kong, but his name was Bananas Grande. And it was this the fat character with the hat. I mean, it's like, I just, Bananas Grande also might be the best name I've ever come up
with. It's like a porn name.
If I ever go that way, I will call myself Bananas Grande. So it was a blast. I mean, it really, it took me to a new place creatively that I hadn't been. I was really stalled out. And doing that was very freeing because it let me play in other people's waters a little bit, which I like to do, but it let me take that and totally morph it into something new. It was awesome. The show was great. I had a great response. You know, a lot of people showed up. We had a great time. And then I've kind of been quiet since then.
Well, I mean, you've been in the toy space for so long.
Yeah.
You've kind of seen, and correct me if I'm wrong, in even just the short amount of time I've been in this, you've seen at a greater level us, like, as creators go from, we can hand make these action figures and we can make cool stuff. And there's some part of it that can look like it's handmade, like the Suck Lord style, or there's like the Dan O'Brown style. Mm-hmm. Like there's all these different realms, but that is like, it's almost like that part of creating feels like it's fading away slowly. And I don't understand why, because now like factory access is the easiest thing at this point.
Right. Right.
Figuring out how to communicate with the factories and fun, like all that stuff. And so it's like, it looks like the world is of toys and collectibles, at least, is moving towards only factory base, which is such a heartbreaking movement.
Yeah. I mean, it's the downside of that is it costs a lot, you know?
Yeah.
But I think we're seeing sort of two movements with a lot of the artists. I think we've got one group that is moving more towards factory or vinyl, you know, injection molding, like that kind of thing, to get their ideas out in a bigger, you know, a bigger way. And then I think we're seeing a second group that are going the exact opposite direction.
Cool.
Which is, I don't want to do runs anymore. I want to do one-offs. I want to do like the show, right? I want to take a theme and create 35 different figures, which you can't do if you're doing through a factory. You know, you can create one form, but then you'd have to get a paint mask for every single different version. You have to create a different card and all this stuff.
Yo, let's take a pause real quick. Are you trying to launch a Kickstarter? Are you new to making toys? Are you trying to figure out how to do this Instagram thing and marketing and business side and all that? Send us a DM. Our goal has always been that we want to care for the community and we want to be there for everything that is going on with the community and people that need help, because we were once helped. So we want to pass that on. If you are looking for that kind of stuff, let us know. We will answer questions. We also are starting this new thing where we can help you through the entire process, because it is sometimes overwhelming when you're just stepping in and you're trying to get information from everywhere and piece it together. And it's always nice to have it all in one spot. So if this is you, shoot us a DM. We'd love to talk to you.
You can do that when you're doing the pieces by yourself. Mm-hmm. So I do. I it's interesting. And I love seeing what a lot of people are doing. You know, Barbarian Rage is a great example of, he's still hand sculpting everything. You know, it feels very much like him. Mm-hmm. And he's getting all the vinyls made, you know, overseas.
Yeah.
But then he brings them back and he is hand painting everyone. And he is, you know, crafting this ridiculous leather armor and, you know, figuring he's still casting resin objects to put inside the chests of these clear, you know, vinyl pieces. And so he's sort of combining the garage artist that we sort of all started coming up with, you know, 10, 12 years ago. And this new thing, you're exactly right, where it is a lot more factory there, you know?
Yeah.
Also, you know, as with everything right now, technology is moving so fast that you could literally probably go into an AI program, see, generate me a character, then take it to a 3D printer and print it out, you know?
Yeah, there are some, I get ads for them all the time. And I'm really hesitant to even talk about them because I don't want people to search them out, because it's not a good way to go. But there is ads that come up where it's like, do you have a drawing? Put it into this program. It'll give you the sculpt. Then put it into this one. It'll break it down into the print like side.
Yeah. Even Photoshop was showing at one of their recent like conventions or something.
Yeah.
They took a drawing and Photoshop. AI in the Photoshop program made turnarounds of that drawing.
Oh, is this the one where he was like fighting a dragon or something?
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. And live, like in real time, they would turn it and it would generate the turnarounds, you know? And to some degree, I don't know. I'm in this weird middle ground with it because I see the value of some of this stuff, right? Especially for creators who are big conceptual creators and don't have the full skill set. There are very few of us can do every single piece of it. And and honestly, until the last couple of shows, I wasn't one of those people, but then I decided I wanted to start drawing. And that's taken me in a totally different direction. That's more where my art is right now. Mm-hmm. And so for the Worst Toys in the World show, I drew every card back. I drew it digitally and printed it, but I drew every card back. I made every card back. I made the figures. I molded the figures. I painted the figures. The only thing I didn't do was make the blisters. Mm-hmm. I did all of it myself. But that's rare. And I'm not saying I did it well. I just did it, you know, because I wanted to try. So that on one hand, it's great that there's tools that will bring people's ideas to life that couldn't before. On the other hand, I think we are slipping into a weird zone of mediocrity where the thing that a lot of this AI art is doing is instead of, it can create it so easy that it's, and we see it so often now that our ideals for what art is or what something that's visually stimulating is are starting to slip. Mm-hmm. We're starting to say, well, you know, at first it was, let's make fun of the thing with six fingers.
Yeah.
And now we sort of accept that if the hand looks weird, it was AI generated, but I see it all the time. You see six fingered art, you see like you go to Michael's during the holiday and they're AI generating their Halloween posters. And you can see it's like, that is not anatomically correct.
Yeah.
Yet they're selling them. I watch people buy them. So there is a general, I don't know. That's my big worry. The job stuff is a big worry too, but it just sucks that we created this thing, this tool. We didn't. People smarter than me created this tool.
Yeah.
And instead of using this tool to do our taxes and wash the dishes and mow the lawn, we're using it to do the human things. We're using it to write. We're using it to create art. And there are things in there that are very helpful in those creation process, but you know, I see this slip. People get used to things that are not as high quality, that don't come from people. And then when something does come from a person, it doesn't mean as much. And that's what I'm afraid of with that whole
Yeah. I mean, you bring up taxes. It created top sheets for me. For sure.
It's amazing what it can do. I mean,
yeah. Image generation is really hard for me to get behind. I've used it a couple times in order to convey ideas to the sculptor when I know my words aren't working. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, I don't know that image design, like I just haven't found a use for it yet in a creative space, especially the harder part is like, we are in a weird cycle where it's like you need so much money to survive because everything is so expensive, and AI has made things easier to make and just pump out regardless if it's good or not to help you make that money. And so we're like clinging to both sides of it. I don't know, dude. I'm not so staunch against AI as information gathering if you're going to do the work and research through it and copyright and all those things. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to image generation, I still struggle because I don't know what to do with it.
The one thing that I have found it really useful for, and it's because, I'm not a great artist drawing-wise and painting. I really enjoy what I do, and I think I have I'm pretty well-defined style at this point. But one thing I've never been able to do is visualize and then translate.
Correct.
So I always, as far back as I can, is from when I started painting and drawing, which isn't that long ago. I think it was 2008 is when I started painting. I would always go into Photoshop and piece together the pose I wanted first. So I would take all the different, I'd find 100 pictures and I like this arm and I like this, and I would piece them together. And then that's what I would use as my reference to paint. Mm-hmm. And the one image generation thing I have found really useful is getting body positions and forms, and
yeah,
because I can go in and say, you know, I'm having trouble getting this hand right, or generating this running pose or whatever, and it will get, it's like those little, you know, wooden things that you would put into poses to copy. Mm-hmm. You know, so from that I'd be lying to say I didn't use it to help me with some layouts that way. But I still try to make sure everything's coming from me. I don't want to ever go and say, give me an idea for this.
Right. Because
that's taking the human element out of it. You know, I want my ideas to come. And then if I need to massage it somewhere, you know, I used AI to put fur on something because I couldn't draw that. Okay, fine. You know, or digitally, like it was,
it was a
toy packaging. So that's where I try to leave it. We'll see. I mean, you said, you know, when you were talking about sort of how it's infiltrated everything. And I saw somebody write the other day that, the most disheartening thing about AI is it was a tool created for rich people to do things cheaper while taking jobs away from the people who aren't rich.
Yeah.
And that really stuck with me. I was like, this is hard to, it's hard to get behind when you're like, yeah, you're taking jobs away from people that need it. So some dude that already has a lot of money or some corporation can make more money.
I mean, the cool part, so the cool part of AI, if you use it, like, what's the word? Not with integrity, like use it.
Conscientiously.
There you go.
Is that the same thing as with integrity? I don't know.
So what I did, so I made a zine and I had it do something that I hadn't ever done with AI before. And I said, I don't want like an explanation of what this is. Find me every resource that talks about this. Mm-hmm. And then I wanted to make sure that I went through the resources to actually make sure that it was real. Yeah. And then I had to write my own thing.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray. We're saved, DLV2. Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
Now, what it is it's this. And it is called Operation Devil Eyes. And I don't know if you ever have heard about it.
No.
It is supposed to be this classified document that I created, where the United States government funded the creation of an Osama bin Laden doll.
Whoa.
That when he goes out into the sun, his face peels off and he turns into the devil. It's a true story. It's a real thing. And I had to, it was sent over to me from, he's in Australia and I can't remember his name. That's crazy.
Titty Beans?
Yeah, it's Titty Beans. So he sent it over to me and he said, hey, toy history stuff. You love this. Check this out. When you type it in on Google, you only find like two or three things.
Wow.
Because it's like, it's still weird. But when you type it on AI and say, find me every resource you can, you get books, you get shows. And so there's a conscientious way to use AI.
Yeah. That's the do my taxes version, right?
Yeah.
Like, yes, we love going to libraries. We don't want libraries to go away. But if you can get all that research and then still do the work yourself, still put it through the human engine and get your viewpoint on that.
Yeah.
You know? I've always said that to me, the definition of art is a physical manifestation of the artist's point of view. You can't have that if you're putting it through a computer. That's a physical manifestation of the artist's idea from the computer's point of view.
Yeah.
And there are, again, there are great uses for that. But, you know, for me, the definition is human. For me, it's about beauty and emotion and creation and wonder. And I'm not saying that I make beautiful things that are wonderful or emotional or whatever, but I make stuff that I love, right?
Yeah.
Like, that goes back to the old thing of like, don't make what you think everybody wants, make what you love, because if you're stuck with it,
right?
Because it didn't sell, then you're like, oh, that's fine. I like that, you know?
Correct.
I'll keep that because I made something I wanted in the first place. So I find that harder to do if I'm putting my idea through a computer, because then it's not my point of view anymore. It's my idea through something else's point of view. But I doing research on it, that's the way to use the tool, in my opinion. Not that I'm an expert, but
here is the devil's advocate that I am. I will tell you,
devil advocate.
Yeah, especially at DesignerCon, I am very wary of people that say like, "No AI ever. It steals all that stuff." Okay. That's fine. I believe that that's true. And I believe that it's okay to have that stance. But if you can look at Dove's Table and tell me that that's not the same kind of theft where we're stealing from toys and bootlegging, and like my favorite toys to collect are Ninja Turtle bootlegs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's artistic in it, but it legit just stole.
Right.
And so I'm okay with people being against or for something. I just need people to be understanding of the opposite side, that even if we're against that kind of theft, we're not against other theft for some reason.
It's a slippery slope. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, we're against things that put us out of business. You know?
Yeah. Which I get that a lot.
Yeah. Which is why Mattel was against bootlegs at one point, you know, it's like, so I don't know. Speaking of Ninja Turtle bootlegs, did you see the actual licensed Ninja Turtle bootleg figures,
the ones that Mattel put out, the new
I have one of them right back here, because
it's so smart.
It's such a great example of like the thing we do, whether it inspired it or not. It certainly feels like this scene had to have some impact on that episode where they, for those that don't know, they did a Ninja Turtles episode where someone was making bootleg cartoons about the Ninja Turtles and making these bootleg toys that were all warped and weird and just like the stuff I would want to make.
Yeah.
Most of them I'm like, God damn, I wish I designed this. Like it's, they're really well done. And then they released them in stores in these two packs. And I was like, okay, I got to buy one. Cause that's,
I got to support the dragon.
But it's this weird shit we do ending up in the mainstream, you know?
And I think that, what I've told people too is like, Mattel's not watching. Like they're not watching you. They're not watching me. Playmates Toys is not watching, but the people that work for them are very much watching, and they're in this community. And unless we know all the people that are in their like executive lineup or whatever, we have no clue. And
I didn't mean to cut you off there. Yeah, no, you're 100% right. And when I first put out the Severed Limbs back in 2015, whenever it was, a friend of mine bought a set, and he had a meeting with Lucasfilms, and he was like, I want to show this to him. And I was like, don't, you're gonna get me in trouble, dude. Please don't take those. And so he didn't. But he went into the meeting and there was a set of them in the office.
Okay.
Of the person he was meeting with. So clearly they had already like, you're exactly what you're saying. Someone lower on that totem pole was like, this is cool. I'm going to get this, you know?
Yeah. And I'm not going to turn away money.
Yeah.
Like, right. I know who I am. I need to survive. At some point in your journey from that last art show, you also, because you're wearing the hat, got a job with Alex Pardee.
I did.
Are you allowed to talk about that?
Yeah, I can talk about that. The best job I've ever had in my life.
Had. So is it done? Is it like partial right now? What's happening?
So we're still working together. It's not full time. Again, with the economy slowing down, the first thing to go is art. And so pull back a little bit while he's sort of reevaluating how he wants to approach things. But yeah, we're still working together and it's cool. Been an amazing 2 years. Alex and I were sort of friends for a while. We did a collab together in 2017, I think. Mm-hmm. We made this baby Dick's figure, or it's Dick Tracy's head on a baby body.
Yeah.
That was fun. You know, so we've been buddies ever since. And through weird circumstances, I ended up working for a CPA company for a while and he needed an accountant. And so I brought him into that company. He hired them. And then I stopped working for them and he was like, well, you're not working for them anymore. And I need somebody to run my company so I can do art. Cause I spend all day managing. Do you want to do that?
Yeah.
Like, are you fucking kidding me? Of course I
want
to do that.
That's the only job I want.
Literally the place I'm most comfortable, I think, isn't creating my own art. It's helping other artists create theirs. That's sort of the space I'm in that I'm really good at, is helping to empower and helping to facilitate this other stuff. So I've been lucky enough to work with him for 2 years. And, you know, the thing about Alex is, talk about, like, again, the most generous people I know.
Yeah.
He is a prince of a man, a twisted little prince, but.
I've seen his art.
But just like, you know, I come in and I'm helping him revamp his business and doing the things that artists are bad at, like, hey, you should budget this to make sure you're actually making money instead of losing money, and let's create a schedule so we make sure you get things done on time. You know, it's that type of thing. But then he'd also be like, I just found a pile of this stuff in the warehouse. What do we do with it? And he would let me come up with ideas for ways to sell things. So there was a bunch of old prints and zines and stuff. He's like, I don't know what to do with this. I'm probably just going to throw it away. And I was like, no, let me think of this. So as we're cleaning out the warehouse, I found other stuff that was old and out of print and that he didn't have any use for. And so I put together these things called the evidence, where I got manila envelopes and I made like a fake evidence sticker from a police thing. We wrote a little story about, you know, finding all of this stuff in a crime scene. And then we put these rare, you know, out of print zines and, you know, promo things he did and stuff that's been out of print for years, put it in there and sold them. And that generated a good amount of revenue, you know. So he has, it's awesome that as talented and as creative as he is, he will be like, yeah, what ideas do you have? Or he'll run things by me. Or when I'm like, hey, I've got an idea, he'll actually listen, you know. And we've done a lot of things that I helped ideate, you know. So creatively, it's fulfilling. Emotionally, it's fulfilling because I really love Alex and love working with him.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're just, hopefully the world recovers and people have money again and art is a thing that that will generate more. But, and yeah, it's not just that, though. It's changing, fascinating from a business perspective, working with him, because he's got this business model that works so well for him. Mm-hmm. And in the past year and a half, we've watched that stop working because people are spending money totally differently.
Yeah.
And so we spend a lot of time talking about, well, what can we do? We can't sell t-shirts the way you used to. We can't, you know, giant big paintings aren't selling
anymore. Yeah.
What can we do to continue to generate revenue? And so we've, you know, it's been a really interesting sort of journey there to figure out how do we approach this brand new landscape for full-time artists. Like, how do you continue to pay the bills?
Yeah.
Where people that used to buy, you know, 4 t-shirts a month now aren't buying anything, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we have even people in the art world have shifted. Like, my best friend is, I've used him as an example before, but like, especially with all this silver stuff that's happening right now, he's pivoted away from like buying artwork from things and like now stashing money and buying silver. And it's like,
Empire Blister. Empire Blister. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters. Now functional. Toys on Tap. That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's COYSONTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
I don't even know who you are anymore.
Right. Right.
And I think these buying habits that it will eventually, I don't know what this looks like later on. It will get better.
It will, everything ebb and flow, right? Like,
yeah,
it's going to quote unquote normalize, and then it'll get great again. And then it'll normalize and it'll get shitty again. And that's just sort of what it does. You know, you have to figure out how to ride those changes. And that's hard when all you want to do is make stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to make the thing. I want to get the things in my head out.
Yeah.
And it's hard when you have to stop and think about, well, I got to pay bills too. And what I used to do isn't working. So now I can't think about the thing in my head. I have to think about what can I do to make money, you know?
Yeah.
It's tough. And it's, you know, it's, I hope it doesn't sound like a woe is me situation for artists. Because everybody is dealing with that.
Yeah.
You know, it's rough out there right now.
It's caused me to pivot, especially in how I make art now. Mm-hmm. With, it would be really cool to put some of my ideas together and sell them. I know that right now, nostalgia and cheaper toys sell.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two things that I can't get away from.
Mm-hmm.
And they are helping fund the other projects so that I can help other people bring their toys to life. But yeah, like the Kaiju Claw, I'm excited. It's almost done. And I have Ninja Turtle stuff that's like coming through. And I know that those will always sell.
Right.
And I'm trying to have other people learn that, like, it's okay to sometimes make the thing that sells so that you can make the thing that is kind of iffy.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the old Hollywood, you know, two for them, one for me
idea. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's a really true statement. I think that there are, I think smaller, cheaper pieces are driving purchases because people don't have enough money to buy $100, $200 toy anymore, you know, unless that's their one big purchase, you know.
Right.
The other thing that I think is really driving stuff right now is rarity. I think you're still seeing a giant push. And with the Kaiju Claws, again, which, by the way, fucking fantastic, dude. Those are great. I love them. Look at that one. Oh yeah, that's a master there, isn't it?
Yeah, this is the prototype there. I mean, we can talk about the issues that came about with that, and I had to pivot, but three different colorways are on their way.
So cool. I love it. But you know, looking at that, like, what's the first thing that everybody wants? They want the Recollection, right?
Yep.
Because how many are them? 10?
25.
And so,
like, they just, they're so much more expensive than the other ones.
Right.
And they're so much more fragile. And people are like, that's what I want. So,
that points to the other indicator right now, right? Which is rarity. Like, people, the thing that is shockingly not fallen off since the pandemic, you know, in pandemic, everything surged, right? Mm-hmm. Every collectible surged. The thing that has not really fallen off is trading cards.
Weird. And
normal trading cards, like bulk stuff, garbage, right? You can throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
One of ones, particularly if it's a well-known player or Pokemon or whatever, through the roof.
Yeah.
And it's this idea of scarcity. And that's created its own set of disasters where it's, you know, taken things like Pokemon that is a kid's game, a really well-designed kid's game, but still was created for kids and has a huge following of people that just love it and made it so that those people now no longer play.
Right.
Because they can't get the cards because people are spending $9,000 to maybe get a $200 card in their pack.
Yeah. I think the next thing that I've been telling people a lot is in this market, you don't have the time to misstep and not be honest and transparent. And I think that's what happened with the Kaiju Claw. It was an immediate, like, so in the back of my head is always going on the Huck G situation on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. For better or for worse, $237,000 and zero product.
Yeah.
That's scary. His art career is done.
Yeah.
And which is sad. And I've been trying to get him to come on the podcast to have like a, let's do a tell all. I'm going to ask some questions, no judgment. Like I'll even turn the comments off because damn. But that's why immediately when something went wrong, the Kaiju Claw was like, oh, I need to come. I'm going to talk about it. And then everyone's getting your money back. I'm not, my name is not worth sacrificing to make a toy.
Right. Right.
And especially if I want this for longevity and I want more things to be happening through Toys on Tap, I'm so nervous right now to misstep in any way.
Well, I mean, you've been putting up, again, your generosity and your genuineness. You're putting up these manifestos on how you think things should work and what you're finding works. And, you know, that shows that you're dedicated to doing it the right way, you know, or whatever we think the right way is. But you are a customer facing brand.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, I obviously don't know any of the inner workings around the Huck G thing, like whether it was, I most of these times when a Kickstarter goes bad, it's because it spirals out of control and they don't know how to.
Oh yeah. You need someone to come alongside and help you navigate.
Yeah. Yeah. Because again, artists don't necessarily think business mindedly, you know? So it's real easy to get $200,000 in your bank account and be like, great, we're going to start working on this toy. And then, but I got to finish this other project first and I got to finish this other thing first.
Right.
Oh, I got to pay bills this month. So I'll dip into that. But, and then before you know it, the money's gone, you know? So, and again, like it's the number of things that I've seen where different artists have been like, yeah, I made like $50,000 on this thing. And I'm like, sweet, but it cost you $64,000. So you actually lost $14,000. And they're like, oh shit. I thought, like, I was really psyched I made $50,000 on it, you know?
Yeah.
But because budgeting and planning like that kind of feels like it gets in the way of creation, right? Because you have to pause and you have to, you can't just go, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what you want to do creatively. When you get an idea, you just want to go. The two don't necessarily go hand in hand. And so I don't know. That's one of the things I would try to help people. It's funny. I can do it great for other people. I'm terrible at it myself. I set a budget for a project and I'm like, well, shit, I'm four times over that.
Yeah.
But I also like, I don't do this full time.
Right.
You know? And so, yeah, I want to make some money doing it. I want to make sure I break even. And then it would be great to pay a couple bills with it. But ultimately I'm doing it because I want to, because I have to, because it's something I'm really inspired by or something that I just, it's an itch I got to get out, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the other reason I am doing a lot less stuff now. Mm-hmm. Because before it was, I think both of us sort of dealt with this. I think most people in the artist made toy scene, I got to keep putting stuff out. I got to stay relevant. I got to put something out. Here's this show. I got to do this show. Oh, Decon's coming up. I got to do that. And I got to do DK Econ. And I got to do NYCC. And I got to do Clutter. And I got like all, you just had to do all of these things because you needed to stay, you felt like you needed to stay busy and active.
Mm.
And a lot of the stuff I made for those, I'm proud of pretty much everything I made.
Yeah.
But there's definitely things that I'm like, I wouldn't have done that, or I would have done that differently if I had taken the time to really percolate the project, you know, to really think about it.
So
taking these breaks until I have something that I just can't not do.
Right.
Have been really good for me. And so now, and we can get into this a little bit later, but now I'm sort of like ankles deep in a project I can't not do.
Yeah.
And it's fun again, and it'll be fun until that one's done, and I'll be like, all right, now I gotta wait for the next thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Those shows, I always, I always didn't know what to do with online shows. Mm-hmm. And then you have these like invite only toy shows, and I hosted the Furby one. Mm-hmm. What I realized as it was happening was it was building in, whoever thought about it was a genius, right? It builds in a, an ego little thing. Like, I got invited to X. Mm-hmm. And then it builds in a, well, that means I have to produce to make this happen.
Right.
And you just get into this cycle and you realize there's not an amount of money that you could sell your one toy for that's in the in-action show or that's in the DKE Con show or whatever it was to really satisfy the bills that you have to pay or right. the work that you put in.
Right.
You just loved the ego boost, which is fine. Do that for the ego boost. I love that. Yeah. But we no longer can claim like, oh, I'm doing this for like bill. You're not doing it for bills now.
Right. I mean, we see, I don't want to talk out of school.
Yeah.
Cause there are, we are like DK is still selling a lot of toys.
Oh yeah.
But the amount of artist made toys that are selling now versus what was selling 4 years ago is drastically different.
Right.
And you look at 4 years ago when you're having runs of like 100 figures sell out in minutes. And now most people's runs are 10 to 15 figures. You know, mm-hmm. it's just, it's that part of the market for whatever reason isn't there right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot harder to be a full-time artist doing that. I think most of the people that do it are still, you know, if I can pay for the next project with this, as long as I don't lose money on it, we're good. You
yeah.
know? And it kind of has fallen back into that, I don't want to say hobby level, but that sort of like passion level where I got to make something, you know, mm-hmm. not everybody, but I think some. And that's where growth comes from though, I think, you know, so it'll be interesting to see. I don't think that artist made toys are in a death rattle, you know, but I certainly think where they were and where they are was sort of predictably, you know, why do we talk about, how many times did I say this before when I was on 4 years ago, uh-huh. 3 years ago? The first time I was on, I know we talked about it when the big boom in artists, because it was DKEcon, it was happening online, it was 2020, everybody was looking for something to do, and hundreds of artists came out of the woodwork, right?
Yeah.
And I said, not being shitty, because I want everybody to make it and love what they're doing, but I said, in 3 years, most of these people will be gone.
You because, were so right.
Because you can't make money, enough money to do it, to make a mm-hmm. career out of it, typically. And because at some point, the itch is gone. The joy sort of wears down, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the other thing is like for a minute there, toy artist was the big, I'm a toy artist.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And I always tried to kind of stay away from that because yes, I'm a toy artist, like toys yeah. were my medium, but I never felt like that was all I had to offer. Mm-hmm. I always like, I'm an artist and I just happen to use toys as one of my canvas, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the people, not, I think a lot of the people that came into this, and we're like, I'm a toy artist. And then when they started losing the passion for that part of it, instead of finding a new thing to move to and then yeah. incorporate it back in, they're just like, all right, well, I'm gonna go do something else, which is great. Like, again, no judgment. Like, we're all doing this for fun. So once it's not fun, don't fucking do it anymore. Like,
yeah,
you know,
I think there's a part two. And I mean, Toys on Tap is now on year five.
Yeah.
And I think even in this spot, I want to be delicate with it, that if your art isn't improving, or if you don't have a desire to improve, to get better, to learn a new skill, to do something, it becomes really hard to be satisfied with art and really hard to continually convince people to buy what you're putting out. And I think we saw that a little bit when 2020 hit. It was like anything that could be an action figure that Dove might want, we're going to put it together
right.
and get it to him.
Yeah.
And then you started seeing things where it was like the backer opens up into a storybook.
Right,
and like,
right.
We're all trying
to poof.
Yeah. Like I sent him this, like this action figure in a box that looks like a briefcase with a badge. And like, I just kept investing in these things to the point where I realized like, my art just has to shift in if I'm going to keep doing this stuff. And it's really hard for people to hear that I no longer can just slap a random head on an action figure and call it something because we might not be in that same marketplace anymore.
Right. But I will say that experimentation is important.
Yeah.
You know, and what people deem as failure is it's important to have that.
Yeah.
One of the big things that takes up my time is my daughter got into softball. And so
I'm awesome.
coaching girls softball. And the big art thing I'm doing is I've designed logos for all these teams. So I'm designing like 8 logos.
That's right.
That was a weird shift. It's super fun. We can get into that in a second, but, cause that led to a very strange path. One of the things I tell the girls all the time is like, listen, the success is the fuel, right?
Yeah.
When you win, when you do something well, you want to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But the failure is the roadmap.
Yeah.
If you continually do the same thing well over and over and over and over and over again, you're the iPhone.
Yeah.
Like, you never get any better. You never improve. You just slap a new camera on it and tell people to buy it. And look, the iPhone's great. Like a lot of us use it, you know, but has there been a real significant, like actual significant innovation in that? No.
Mm-hmm.
Not in my opinion. And I'm not, maybe I'm not the right guy to ask, but like I was fine with my iPhone 13 when the 16 came out. The only reason I swapped is because the battery sucked, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that you have to have those failures. And if you're not failing, then you're not experimenting, you know? So, and again, I put failure in quotes because I don't think, you know, whatever, you know, who's to judge what a failure is.
Yeah.
But doing things like just your example of the briefcase and all the stuff and putting all these things into it, like that got you to a realization point.
Yeah. Right?
Like, you know, if you hadn't done that, you wouldn't have hit this one realization, which was, okay, well, I need to go this way because that way didn't work. And I didn't find it fulfilling, you know? You got to get paid somehow, whether it's money, whether it's experience, whether it's fulfillment, you have to get paid somehow. And if you're putting something out and you're not getting anything from it, I don't feel fulfilled by the piece. I didn't make any money off it. It didn't get me any further, you know, recognition or whatever. Then you need to experiment. Something's wrong there, and it's time to play. Like that's when you should play.
Yeah.
That's when you should ruin canvases. That's when you should waste resin. Like do anything that's in your head and play. Cause that's where the growth will come is from fucking around. You know?
Yeah. I did tell someone the other day that success, like you don't get to keep it. It's kind of rented every time you do something and then you got to give it back until your next one. And they looked at me like I was a maniac, but it's like, you could have one toy that sells wildly well, and it could be everything that you ever thought you wanted. When that toy no longer does well, what then?
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a clip on the internet of a bunch of actors sitting around talking, like having a round table or whatever. I don't remember all of who was there, but I think Denzel Washington was there. And then Tom Hanks is there, and they're talking about like overcoming hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I've always had the mentality of this too shall pass, right? The hard time shall pass, but also the good time will pass. This too shall pass. Everything is going to pass. Everything is going to move. So you can't get married to the victory. You can't get stuck in the failure, right? Because it will all pass. You just got to keep moving. And, you know, hopefully you're finding things that let you, again, express your point of view as an artist and not what you think will sell or what, I don't know. You know, I try not to be judgy. You know, Dove has this thing. There's two types of art. Good art and art that's not for you.
Yeah.
And I, Scott and I jokingly are like, well, there's also bad art, but honestly though, like if somebody made it genuinely, I have no fucking place to say that's bad. I can just say, I don't like it.
Yeah.
You know? And I try to keep that in mind when I look at anybody's work. You know, it's not for me.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's bad. It's just not for me. And so in that, like, failure can't really exist unless you have a goal of, oh, I spent $20,000 on this. I got to make $21,000. Like, okay.
Yeah.
You've set a bar for yourself that could be, there's a failure point.
Yeah.
You know, but again, maybe it's not. Maybe you don't care about the money. Maybe, again, you're experimenting. It's like, well, this money is a loss leader. This money is going to be gone. Mm-hmm. So what do I get out of it? How am I paying myself? Is it the experience? Is it the idea? Is it the recognition? Is it the fulfillment? The fulfillment one, I keep coming back to it. Like, that's the one that people skip. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that, to me, as an artist, is the most important.
Yeah.
And I say that being in a position where I don't rely on my art to make money, but
right.
I think, you know, Dove jokes and says, you know, if you want to be an artist, you only be an artist if you can't be anything else, right? Mm-hmm. it's hard, but it's because you do it because you get something deeper from it. This is a weird tangent. I'm going to go on.
Absolutely.
What I do on your show, I just talk endlessly and then head into weird directions. sorry, viewers. We were at Yellowstone last summer. And I'd never been before. I grew up in the mountains, so I was expecting it's mountains. It's going to be beautiful, but I live in mountains my whole life. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't ready for the experience of being in Yellowstone because we got 10 minutes into the park and I was like, holy shit. Like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
And my brother-in-law and his wife both worked at the park. So we essentially had two tour guides that knew the park backwards and forwards for 3 days to take us around and show mm-hmm. us everything. And that it was a profound experience on me because of, I wasn't expecting anything. And I was struck with just a level of beauty mm-hmm. and just wild stuff, you know, the pools, and there's parts of that park that literally look like you're on another planet, you know? And while we were driving around, I don't know what sparked it, but my daughter, who's 8, started asking about religion. And she was like, what religion are you? Mm. And I couldn't really give her an answer.
Yeah.
I said, well, you know, I was raised in a certain religion, but I don't believe that. And, you know, we're spiritual, but we don't really have a religion. And she said, you know, why? And I was like, well, I guess I haven't. Right now, I don't have the thing that drives me that way. And that stuck in my head, like really, really embedded in my head. Mm-hmm. And I have this realization that my religion is wonder. The thing that drives me, that trip was as close to a religious experience as I've had in a long time. There was something that was feeding my being of being among these incredible spectacles. Mm-hmm. You can only see when you're there, and that pictures cannot do justice. And I started thinking about what are the things I really that like have always fascinated me, right? Magic, the history of it in particular, not being a magician, I think.
Yeah.
But the history of magic and performing these things that people are just like, holy cow, how did you do that? Right. Mm-hmm. Filmmaking. Being in a movie where you are just transported somewhere else and walking out just like, whoa. Music, where it wraps you to a point where you feel like you get the tingles up your spine, right? Like I call it blanket music because it's like just sort of wraps you up. It consumes you. That I realized to me is wonder. Mm-hmm. It's a state beyond just normal being. You're just like, holy shit, that's awesome. And so that's my religion. Yeah. Wonder is my religion. Seeking the things that make me go, God damn, I'm glad I'm alive to experience that. That's something that I'm going to remember. That's something that I can't see every day. I feel, I don't want to say special, but I feel like it was special for me to experience that. And so I don't know what that means in the grand universal thing, you know, but to me, like, I don't know, this idea that beauty and power and just experiencing, I don't know how to put it other than wonder, you know, yeah. experiencing things that make you go, how is this possible?
Yeah.
You know, that feeds me in a way that other things don't.
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't even remember what got me on this tangent. I'm sure there was some reasonable reason I got there, but
yeah,
you know, the satisfaction of art comes from the seeking of wonder.
Yeah.
And I think, again, we're not making, you know, the Grand Tetons, right? We're not making these things that are going to blow your mind. But the act of creating something that you came up with in your head is an act of wonder.
Yeah.
You know, making something that didn't exist before is an act of wonder. You're translating a thought into a physical thing. And I don't know what God is, right, but shit, man, if that's God, I'm happy. You know, yeah. if that's God, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good living there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're having an encounter. I think boil down religion to whatever, you have an encounter with the infinite, and your finite brain is having a real hard time navigating that, and yeah. settling on the term wonder is pretty damn good for whatever it is.
There's no way to put it into words because it's not a physical experience.
Right.
You know, it's hard to describe, and it sounds cheesy when you get into it. And yeah. every time I've told somebody this, I'm like, God, I sound like a fucking lunatic, but, I don't know. That trip was profound.
Yeah.
In a way that I was very surprised by. And it made me want to seek more of that. And it made me want to, I don't have to make everything I make is great, right? The mm-hmm. next project I'm working on isn't great. It's goofy, but it's something that I think is cool, and it's something that I've never seen before, and it's something that I'm interested in right now, and I'm going to make something that, as far as I know, hasn't existed before.
All right, so now take me into this project.
God, so now we're going to open this profound moment into literally the dumbest fucking
look at the dick I sculpted is what it's gonna be.
Oh man, we're right back into that.
Yeah.
Darth dick.
Yeah.
So I have always been fascinated by sort of reuse.
Uh-huh.
Again, as a quote unquote bootleg guy, like we're reusing ideas, we're reusing parts, and that sort of got me thinking along that. I love a mashup. I love like a good sample in music, you know. I think it's really interesting when you take something that's out there and you find a new purpose for it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I am really fascinated by, particularly right now, is collectability and value.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that all value is manufactured. There is no such thing as real value, right?
Beanie Babies. Yes.
Money is manufactured. Like, you know, everything is manufactured.
I need to pause you right here. If you try to sell me an invisible action figure right now, I'm going to be so pissed.
So I have these blisters.
No, yeah.
No. Oh, man. Yeah, no, it's not that. In the world of collectability,
yeah.
You know, we talked about like one-offs become very, it's a big deal. I've got the one-off Shohei Ohtani card, and I've got the one signature thing. I got the one blue thing or whatever, right? Those go for tens of thousands of dollars, whereas the same card without the blue will be garbage, like literally thrown away. and so I started getting back into trading cards through the pandemic. Typically non-sports, the thing I was doing during the pandemic was buying the card sets that I used to buy packs of when I was a kid, but could only afford like two or three packs and never got to finish the set. So like the ones that brought me back full bore were the Batman 89 series 1 and 2. Like I wanted so I bought, simply to feed my own little child soul,
those packs are so cheap now.
Holy shit, they're so cheap, it's great. I bought a box of each. I sat there one day and just ripped.
Yes.
Fucking dude, 13-year-old me was in heaven.
Yeah.
and put together a full set. And, you know, it's just like, and I was like, this is fun. I like this again.
Yeah.
So I started going and collecting movies that, you know, I liked the sets when I was a kid. So E.T. and Gremlins and all these things that were the cards I would buy when I was a kid and never got to collect. And that got me hooked back into Pokemon, which my daughter and I were buying together.
Old sets and new sets?
It was the new sets. It was the 151 set in particular, where they're taking all the original ones and then re-releasing them. That's the one that created this goddamn chaos that ruined that for everybody. You could still get them. So we were having a blast just opening packs. And then that sort of course, leads to value. And it's like, oh, well, now there's value to these things. And so I kind of got just pulled in back into trading cards. And then working for Alex has done a lot of trading card stuff. Mm-hmm. And during the pandemic, he worked with Topps and did Project 70. So he was doing these baseball card.
That's right.
Baseball cards for them. And through the pandemic, because I loved Alex, is before we were working together, and I was into cards again, I ended up buying all of those cards. And that sort of got me not back into sports cards, but got me sort of interested again in sports cards. I like watching sports. I'm a big Dodgers fan. I'm a big Denver Broncos fan. I don't collect sports. I'm not a stats guy. I just
enjoy
watching the game. You know, I'll watch a game on Sunday and I'm happy. But I started thinking about the one of ones and the cards that everybody wants to collect, and all the other cards are called bulk.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just boxes and fucking boxes of bulk sitting around.
Yeah.
And so I decided I wanted to try to make bulk collectible.
Okay.
So also I'm me. And so I'm going to do some weird fucking joke about it, 'cause that's what makes me happy.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things about baseball is mustaches and mullets.
Stop it. Man,
they're great.
Yeah.
So I have been collecting bulk, and I'm releasing one card set called Sweet Stash Bro, and another card set called Major League Mullets.
Yep.
And I'm taking old cards, and through a process I've found, I am altering them to become this new thing. I'm creating a new rarity scheme. I'm creating a brand new card set out of existing garbage cards.
Yeah.
We're going to see if anybody wants to buy it or not. So I'm still fairly early. Like the set, I've got all the cards, I've got them all sorted, and the logos are almost all designed. So now I have to go into the part where I'm printing it. But
is this with Alex or just you?
Just by myself. This is just me. I mean, he and I've talked about it, but yeah, this is like, again, I bounce a lot of ideas off him. So, and now I'm about to start embellishing the cards so that they are unique, so that they are its own set, but it's existing cards. So I'm trying to take garbage and turn it into something collectible, and maybe it will work and maybe it won't. We'll see. I'm hoping the oddity and the spectacle of it. I will say that my favorite, I've got some different gags that I'm doing in there. For like the collectible sets, like the mini sets or the rare cards. But my favorite packs are the Oops All Mattingly packs, where you get one pack and it's all Don Mattingly cards. 'Cause that dude's mustache fucking rocks.
Yeah. I'm kind of into that pack. Dude, it's like a God pack.
There's only going to be 10 of them.
Yeah. Holy crap.
So it's a weird, and look, it's funny to come out of talking about religious experience and go into like fucking mullets rule. But I don't know, man, like I'm really excited about it. So we'll see if anybody else is.
There is a company, I will send it to you the second, it's an ad that pops up where you make your own slabs for graded stuff. And it's like, it gives you the things and then you get to put whatever you want.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's how, and their whole thing is like, you can make whatever art cards you want and put them in the slabs.
There's another company called Timu that fucking sells those things for like a dollar a piece. So I have a bunch of like the CGC or the PSA slabs,
which is so funny. And you can easily print off PSA stuff. There is I can't remember his name. He makes weird cards and stuff. And I've always love when people do that, but that's cool.
Yeah.
I like the idea of reusing bulk cards. When I was a little kid, my grandfather gave me, boxes. Yeah. So the NBA and the MLB and a little bit of football through the 90s had sets that went nowhere.
Yeah.
They just were trash sets.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you were getting the biggest hits possible, like a Jordan or something like that, you weren't getting anything. Yeah. And he had boxes and boxes and he gave me. And I'm like sorting through this. There is one card that exists in an NBA, I think it's a 90-something set where it's two brothers that are in the back.
The Menendez brothers. I was about to mention that card.
I had like 30 of them.
Dude, that card, like.
And it was such a cool thing. And I was like, I don't know what to do with these. And over the years, I've just lost track of where those are.
Yeah. Look, my favorite cards are the cards that are bizarre by accident.
Yeah.
By far my favorite cards. And I have a collection of a bunch of those. So I have that card. I don't have the fuckface card. I wish I did. That was kind of expensive now, where, you know, he wrote fuckface on his bat.
Yeah.
There's a card called grab ass where a guy is running and he's tripping and the first baseman's trying to tag him and it looks like he's grabbing his butt. There's the Angels poop one where it's a guy squatted over and the Angels logo, the old one that's the shape of California, is right next to his ass. So it looks like he's shitting the Angels. These ones that are like, fucked up by accident.
Yeah. Whoever did this, love them.
Oh, God. Yeah. I love. There's obviously the C-3PO dick card, which I don't have that either. And then there's one that, like, there's some that just make me laugh that I don't think anybody else thinks are funny, but there's one in the Batman set that says, I can't remember exactly what it says, but something like the Dark Knight is here to protect Gotham City or something like that. And it's like Batman TM, the Dark Knight TM is here to protect Gotham City TM from the Joker TM.
They
and
really so want
literally like a TM after every word. And I think that's fucking hilarious. I don't know why I just did. So that's sort of where I go with this, like, idea of that's where the mustaches and mullets come in, because it's like, what's the bizarre thing here? What's the thing that makes me laugh and me go, God damn, that's crazy. And it's some of these fucking mustaches are bananas. I love it.
And again, getting cards made, like, you're doing this and they are like, there's a rarity scheme and all that stuff. And getting at this point, if it explodes and all of a sudden you're like, I got to do more, like getting to a factory that can do these things has never been easier, which is awesome.
The fun of it is taking the old shit, right? Like, so.
Which you could probably send it to a factory.
Probably.
And say, and like, make this card for me.
Yeah, probably. It's funny too in these, because I've been buying bulk when I can find it cheap.
Yeah.
And like just last night I went and picked up a bunch of bulk from a guy and he was like, it's $20 for 2,000 cards. And I asked him what the cards were. I mean, that's pretty standard, $20 to $40 for like 2,000 cards. Yeah. And I asked him like, what years it was from? And he was like, what are you looking for? And I was like, cause everybody's buying them thinking there's going to be a gem in there.
And there never is.
Never is. Right. Mm-hmm. And I told the guy, I was like, honestly, I'm looking for mid 70s through 90, like nothing after 90. I'll take earlier, but like mid 70s through 90, cause there's not a lot of value. Like they can get more valuable as you go under like 75 ish. I was like, I'm not looking for value. I am looking for a variety of bulk. Mm-hmm. He went, he ended up selling me 5,000 cards for $30. Cause he's like, just take them.
Now like, having to sort gonna buy through them, that is
just
crazy.
Take them. Yeah. But I love the sorting through. Like that's my ADHD just home. I'm just like,
yeah,
laser focusing, making my stacks. like I said, I don't know that anybody's going to think it's as funny as I do, but I'm having a blast putting it together.
Yeah.
And like
you're living the art experience that we all desire so wholeheartedly, and it's energetic and amazing to watch it happen through someone else we can't find it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, like again, people question, is this art, right? Mm-hmm. But to me, I've always been a conceptual, I hate the term conceptual artist, but that's what I am, you know. Like the toy has never been that important to me. It's the concept of the toy.
You know,
like the worst toys on worst toys in the world show wouldn't have worked if the concept wasn't there.
Yeah.
I just would have been making bootleg versions of toys and calling it penis instead of peanuts, you know, like, that was my favorite. One of my favorite.
Yeah.
I don't know. The conceptual part of it has always been my favorite part. And so it took me a long time. We talked about this before. Like it took me a long time to accept the word artist.
Mm-hmm.
And now even it took even more time to be like, oh no, what I do is art. Mm-hmm. Again, not everybody's gonna think it is. Some people are gonna think I'm just making fucking weird shit, which I am. But I'm taking my point of view. I'm taking the things that I think are funny and I think are interesting and the things that fascinate me, like collectability and bulk and, mm-hmm. you know, grading and all these things, and I'm turning it into something. And yeah. So, you know, is it high art? Fuck no.
Oh, for someone it will be. Yeah. I told someone the other day, like, everyone is someone's Banksy. I don't care what you make. Like there is someone out there that has collected everything you've made. And when we start to say, like, I don't know if I make art, talk to your one fan.
Yeah.
I bet you that fan would argue.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think if I have one of those.
There's got to be someone out there.
There must be. I don't
yeah. know. I mean, if you're listening, don't respond.
Please don't respond, because that's going to make me, I'll end up having to use you to, you know, fix
shield it. Yeah.
Yeah.
When's the release date of this?
I don't know yet. It'll be in the next couple of months. Okay. I'm trying to get it sort of fast tracked so I don't derail on it. But like I said, the hardest part was getting all the cards and sorting them and figuring out the rarity scheme and all that stuff.
Chat GPT. So, rarity.
I didn't even think about that. I didn't even fucking think about that. God damn it, Abe.
You ready for this?
Save me so much time.
This, I need everyone to hear this. And now that you're talking about rarity, here's a good thing to think about.
Mm-hmm.
When you design a blind box, there are ratios to keep in mind.
Right.
No one tells you that. And so, like, you have to design a box, and then you have, so just know that I have all these box designs and the project will never get off the ground.
Oh man.
Like, cause I pivoted because I still wanted to exist.
Right.
So there was the blind box style of the claw, and that box was designed. And then there was a design, like a big box to hold little boxes that you could mm-hmm. be on your counter at a shop.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, like, there were six commons, two uncommon, one rare, one mythic.
Mm-hmm.
And so you punch in, here's how many I want to order of each one in the chat and say, like, the ratio, like, this is what the standard is. Mm-hmm. Make me ratios. How many cases? How many? And so it says, awesome. The mythic goes in one in every 15 to 25 cases.
Man, I never even thought of that. I'm gonna do that for sure then.
It's rad, and it gives you ratios and all those things. Here's the issue: you'll be okay because you're hand making these and you're making yourself. Factories have MOQs, so your mythic, I still have to order 50.
Right.
Only like five go out.
Right.
And so I sit on them, and so that part sucked. And then, as the project was like coming close to a finish, it was like, well, if I only order 50, how many cases can I make? If I only order this. And you get to a point where it's like you have to order a certain amount or make a certain amount so that rarity exists and that it actually is true rarity.
Right.
Because if once someone realizes a chase isn't a chase, it's over.
It's over. Yeah. No, 100%. Like you can't re-release those rares. You know, you
sit on it.
It's you know, doing those ratios, I was doing that a lot with Alex. That was sort of where I taught myself to do it. I didn't even goddamn think of using ChatGPT because of the trading cards that he's been doing a lot of, like the mm-hmm. one-offs for shows, and he wanted to do variants. And so we're starting to figure out what are the ratios for all these different cards. And, because it's way easier to do a ratio than it is to say, like, there's 40 of these, because
right.
if there's 40 of them, it limits what you can do, right? You might mm-hmm. find... You might start the production run and find that the online response to it is through the roof. And you're like, well, I don't want to make, 200 cards. I want to make 500 cards.
Mm-hmm.
But you've already announced that there's only 40 of these. So you're fucked. Yeah. You got to stay with that. So if you do a ratio for everything except for like the really rare, the chase stuff,
mm-hmm.
I think the chase stuff you need to number. But the other stuff, as long as you're transparent about the ratio and as long as you maintain that ratio, then you're good. And that's what I'm doing with these is there are chase sketch cards that I'm doing of, famous mustache baseball players. There are some embellished cards that I'm doing, and those will be numbered.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else, even though most of the things in the set are a one of one technically, because I'm trying not to do too many double ups. Like for the commons, I don't mind if I double up as much, but there's probably only going to be one of most of these cards with the stamp on it. So they're all sort of a one of one, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm still applying a traditional scheme to it to see, I'm curious. I'm curious to see if this turns into anything. Like I said, I don't expect it to be big. The goal is to sell through the first run. If I do that, then I'm like, okay, I'm onto something. And if not, then it's like, well, cool. That was fun. What's the next thing I'm going to do? You know,
I have one question and your answer will sell this for me.
Uh-oh. No pressure.
When I was a little kid, my mom got me into writing letters to old football. Like you could go on eBay and say, I need and buy a book of addresses.
Wow.
And it's all these athletes. So like Terry, like I was into the Pittsburgh Steelers. So Terry Bradshaw, Lynn Swan, like Franco Harris, I had signed cards from all of them because it was like, you could just send them the card. You will have all my money if you create a card and then send it to the guy to have him sign it.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You'll have all my money. You name it. You name the price. It's like to make a fake card and then have that person sign it.
Yeah.
Holy
there's,
moly.
Who is it? There's Ray Gun cards and then another card guy.
Oh, yeah. Sidekick Labs does them.
Yeah. And one of the guys like makes these autograph cards and then takes them to get autographed. And
how funny.
Are you a Pirates fan too?
My dad was from Pennsylvania. Like his family is from Italy. They moved to Pennsylvania. And then anything that was Pennsylvania based, like Pittsburgh, whatever, Pirates and Penguins. And I'm not a sports fan at all.
Got it.
Yeah. That has died in me.
Well, if you're a mustache fan,
yeah,
I think it is neck and neck between the Pirates and the Brewers for the best collection, overall collection,
yeah,
of mustaches in the fucking major leagues. They're like, dude, the Pirates and the Brewers have some fucking facial hair. It is awesome.
Okay, so I might be getting a set of cards.
I got you. I'll send you one.
Yeah, that's a cool project. I think that you are experimenting with other things that people in this season of uncertainty, this is if it's not going to work or if it's going to work, do whatever you can. Put it out. And if it feels something like the project that I have a group working on right now is we're stepping into the licensing. And it's a toy line that no one's asking for. Like, I want to bring back Snailians.
I don't even fucking remember Snailians.
These little guys.
Oh my God. And I don't even know what those are. I am on board.
You open them up and this guy comes out.
Holy crap.
And so they're small and they're tiny and they had a full run of like 6 to 8 characters. And then died. Wow. They had vehicle plans. No one wanted it. They have a comic book. It was this big. It came with the toy.
I love it.
And being generous, like this should never be the goal of being generous, right? But being generous and being nice in a scene in which demands a lot, sometimes you build relationships to where when you're like, I want to do this, and people just flock and say like, I want to jump on board.
Right.
And so I found the creators of Snailians and I said, listen, I only work in soft vinyl at the moment. Mm-hmm. I want to make one of each of the characters. This is what I want to do. I want to like do a Kickstarter, like comic book, all these things because nostalgia is huge right now. Mm-hmm. And the guy was like, listen, we had come to an agreement that Snailians would die and never be licensed because no one wanted it. And then we met you. And I said, yeah, yeah. So, and he was like, let's do a handshake agreement.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put some down in writing. We want you to lead it. You put your spin on it. You do what you want to do. We'll send you all the assets. If it takes off, we'll bring your team on and we'll go.
Cool.
And I was like, dude, like that's the stuff, like that's the moment we're in right now. Designer Con is not a place where I can bring Snailians and people are going to be like, that's the toy. Right. It's not a nostalgia like thing that people really remember, but I can't wait to do it.
But like someone will. And that's the thing is some dude is going to be walking down the aisle and he's going to see, you know, the Stay Puft Krang and it's going to catch his eye. And he's going to look to the left and he's going to have a sense memory reaction to his Snailians collection.
Yeah.
There's always a couple. And then someone else is just going to be like, that thing's fucking weird. Let's buy that. You know?
Yeah. So that's awesome. You're leading the charge in what it looks like to do. And you're doing something like a lot of us, including myself, I don't always have the courage to do. Like, you're making your own art. Like, I, a lot of it is like with Toys on Tap, I get to help fund other people's work. Mm-hmm. Or I get to fund stuff like mashups. But rarely do I get to fund my own. And it's due to lack of whatever. But you're doing something that not a lot of us do. And it's rad.
Thanks. I mean, I'm just following whatever yellow brick road my diseased brain takes me down. And, you know, it's you just got to listen to what you're into. Like, yeah. I think, you know, particularly in the art thing, because of the popularity of Star Wars, because of the ease of entry of Star Wars, and because of the backbone of that group, you know,
right.
So many people that I don't think have a connection to Star Wars make Star Wars toys. And some of them are real successful, but you know, I was born in 77. I mm-hmm. love Star Wars, but as my love for Star Wars has started to wane, mm-hmm. The desire to do anything with it has as well, you know, whether it's the easy entry point or not. And it doesn't mean I don't still love Star Wars. I still do, you know, but you know, and I actually am working on sort of a Star Wars project right now, but it's a very different direction. But the reason I'm doing that Star Wars project is because the idea excites me, not because the property excites me.
Right.
And I think, you know, you have to embrace that part of I change, the things change, you know, the things I love change, but also like the Snailians, the older you get, the things that really stick with you from your childhood, those are the important ones. You
right.
know? Like, as much as I may drift to and from Star Wars, right? Mm-hmm. 2-1-B is part of my soul.
Yeah.
Right? That robot, it for some reason, is part of the DNA makeup of my creativity, you know? There's certain shows that are, you know, The Adventures of Pete and Pete, the show from the 90s on Nickelodeon, right?
Like, yeah.
That show is a part of the DNA makeup of how I see the world. And the further I get from it, the more I realize the importance it had in shaping what I find funny or what I, you know, how I look at things or what I find, you know, visually interesting. And I don't know. I think that's the cool part of nostalgia, you know, like, yeah, we use it for comfort, you know, yeah, we use it for, I can't think of the right words here, but also I think if you really pay attention to it and you pay attention to the things you genuinely love from when you're a kid, you're going to find these little pieces of who you are now rooted in a bunch of this stuff. At least, you know, my generation and your generation, I don't think my parents' generation has that. And I don't know that, you know, Gen Y and Gen Z have that much connection to that stuff. That,
yeah.
You know, they sort of were raised in a different light than we were, you know?
Yeah.
But cause you're millennial, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm Gen X. And I think we're the last two generations that really have this deep toy connection because we still had toy stores. We still had cartoons pushing toys.
Yeah.
Video games were prevalent, but not, and dominating. I mean, look, Nintendo took over our life in 86, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, it didn't push everything else out of the way. Whereas now, like, you know, you'll see kids that live, breathe, and sleep Minecraft and have for 10 years, you know.
Yeah.
And that's not good or bad. That's just the way things move. But and when they get to be my age, I hope they look back and see the little pieces of that helped develop who they are, you know. Or what their outcome, or not their outcome, their outlook is on visual things and humor and communication and all those little human pieces. I don't know. I think, you know, there's a reason the word culture is in pop culture.
Yeah.
It is part of the language of who we are now. And it always has been. It just looked very different 200 years ago than it does now. But it's still culture.
Yeah.
You know, and it still really has a big part in defining you know, how we see things and how we communicate man, we got real deep in this episode.
Like, this is crazy. Months. This is such a good prologue. Do you want to start the episode or?
Sure.
Just a whole nother hour.
I got another 3 hours. Let's do this.
I mean, I think you're right. And I think, so let's head this way. Where are we going to see Janky Toys at this year? I mean, this is in January. Mm-hmm. I really only asked the people in January this question, mm-hmm. because by the time we get to February, we have to already know where we're headed.
Right.
Like I give people 4 weeks, and then if you don't know where you're headed after that, uh-oh. So where are we seeing you? What shows will we see you at? Does the cards mean like having some kind of table with Dove or booth, or like what's this all look like?
I have the opposite philosophy of you, which is if I don't know where I'm at in February, it's because I never know where the fuck I'm at. I don't know yet. It'll be interesting to see. Dev and I have definitely talked about some things, and he loves this project and has already commissioned a whole private set for himself of his favorite baseball player who doesn't have a mustache. So I'm going to have to draw a mustache on every one of them.
Damn it, Dev.
But he's going to have a one of a kind set of his favorite.
Yeah.
But you know, if it gets some traction, I mean, there's some possibility there. I don't know yet. This year for me is the past couple years have really been, this is not fun for toy conversation, have been about family for me.
Yeah.
And last 2 years in particular, like last 3 years, really, someone gave me a piece of advice that said, these are the only years you have with your kid.
Right.
So do everything you can, volunteer every way you can, be there. And I took that way too at heart. And my wife and I both volunteered for way too many things and got way too many commitments. And it had an impact on our family because we found that we're doing all of this stuff for everybody else and we're not spending the time with each other. Mm-hmm. So like, again, this isn't interesting for toys, but that's what I've been thinking about is, okay, mm-hmm. I'm pulling back from this other stuff. But the nice thing is, in pulling back from all these other commitments that I've had for the past 3 years, I'm freeing up a lot of mind space. Mm-hmm. And that mind space is already getting filled by the weird shit that I like to fill it. So, you know, my hope is, if I'm daydreaming, and this is probably not feasible financially, but I would love to have a solo show somewhere in LA. I've got a concept that I'm not ready to talk about there that I think would be really fun. Those are the things that really interest me now. So you're going to find me though, I'm going to be a decon with DKE because I love those guys. And that has been, that also has been great for me. And I can't say how much it's meant to me that, you know, Dove has kept me around for as long as he has, because my connection or my output of toys sort of waxes and wanes. Mm-hmm. Doing DK Toys TV has kept me connected with everybody, and I've been very lucky to be someone that people see frequently, you know, if you're watching that, you're one of our 12 people that watch our show. But you know, that opportunity has kept me really engaged with the people that I've met and really grown some strong friendships, you know, through doing this art. And I don't know that I would have been able to stay as connected if I didn't have that. So I'm always like, when he needs me to show, I'll be there. Like, so I'll definitely be a decon. Who knows if the cards do well, maybe I'll beg him for a piece of table and pull up there, you know?
Yeah.
And also these collecticons are all popping up. So we're dipping our toe in some waters to see what things look like.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to go spend $600 on a table to sell my mustache trading cards yet, but
yeah,
we'll see. You know, you never know. Something could burst, you know, or I might sell two and then just have a box full of these fucking trading cards for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wish I had a better answer for you than hanging out with my family. But I'll tell you, like I said, dumping this other stuff, and I was happy to do the volunteer stuff I was doing. I was on a bunch of board of directors. I was president of a board of directors. I feel like that was time well spent. Like I did a lot of good, but I did a lot of good for a lot of other people, and which I think is important. And now I need to do some good for the people that I care about the most, you know? And so my wife and I are both like, yep, we're backing way off, and we're going to spend more time doing family stuff. And luckily my daughter loves art. So
yeah,
we'll be doing a bunch of that, I'm sure. But
rad.
I don't know. I'll let you know whenever I have a thing where I'll be, and who knows? I'm a flight of fancy guy, dude. Like, I'll get a hair up my ass, and
yeah,
I designed a board game in a week one day because I got the idea, and then play tested it for a year, and I don't think it would pull it out since then. So, you know, that's how my brain operates.
Yeah. The last part, always plug away where people can find you, get a hold of you, ask you to jump back into art, all those things.
Instagram at Janky Toys. That's really the only place I am right now. I keep threatening to put a store up because I have a bunch of unsold artwork sitting around. And eventually I'll get to that. But and then the other thing, which we didn't really get into too much here, but we accidentally started a t-shirt company because I was doing logos for all these softball teams. Mm. And my wife was like, well, maybe we can find a way to make a little money doing this. So she figured out how to make t-shirts. And that led to, we have our own actual shop now that we do that. Small little, you know, shop, but we do a lot of like elementary schools and stuff. So if you need spirit wear, you can go to goteamspiritwear.com or email info@goteamspiritwear. And we do also, I mean, we can do anything. We don't just do spirit wear. We can do.
I'm looking it up right now.
T-shirts. Yeah, that's been really fun. Like I said, that's also kept the creative going for me because I'm drawing all these logos and learning new processes, and we just got an embroidery machine. I love hats, so this is going to be fun. And I don't know, it's like I said, art isn't one thing, right? Like, how many different mediums can I absorb? What's the thing that excites me right now? So yeah, at Janky Toys is where you can find me directly. And if you want to see the thing I'm putting a lot of my work hours into, it's go to
rad. Dude, thank you again for coming on.
Dude, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. I can't wait to get the jacket next time I come.